This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Don't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
All right, full disclosure. I have never, that I could think of, other than like the Super Bowl, had my kids build their day around a sporting event. I've built my own days around many sporting events. I mean, like, too many to count, right?
Yeah,
where you're like okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this because I know I want to do that, that, and that, and I want to watch this, and so that's how my day is going to go. Do that all the time. If you're listening to this station, you're most likely a big sports fan. You've probably done that as well. You know exactly what I'm talking about. But neither of my daughters, ages 12 and very nearly 10, neither are like passionate sports fans, particularly. Cecily likes it. Avery really doesn't care all that much. But, you know, they don't build their life around it, right? Their life gets built around all the other things they have to do. And then, you know, if I'm watching a game, they'll come hang out with me and watch for a little while. Today, we've built the schedule around watching Caitlin Clark and Iowa take on Paige Beckers and Connecticut.
Awesome.
Built our life around it. Like, okay, I'm going to make sure I'm home from golf by this time. Cecily's got to, you know, playing with a friend. She's got to be picked up by this time. Avery's like, we are going to be there to watch this as a family. That's appointment viewing. The other day, the Monday night game with the 12.3 million unbelievable rematch with LSU, I wanted to do that, but it was like, well, I still have to pick up Avery at school at this time. Cecily still has tonight. We don't have any of that. It's Friday night. No plans. We are watching this game tonight. Can't wait. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I would guess that a lot of other people who've either gotten caught up in it or maybe just heard about it are excited to watch these two teams get after it tonight. I think it's going to be great and a fantastic display. It reminded me, though, of something that Maura has said many times before, and it's an incredibly valid and valuable point that I'm not sure understand isn't maybe even the right word, but like internalized maybe what you were saying until experiencing it myself. I think I wanted to. I agreed with it, but I'm not sure I fully like internalized it until watching my girls now.
Yeah, it's just that representation matters. Sometimes when you grow up and you don't see, like we were talking about it last night, I didn't see any women play like hockey or football when I was growing up. So I ran track. I played a little bit of basketball, but I would have never thought that I could have played in a hockey league or a football league. Sometimes if you don't see other people like you doing something, you don't even think that that could be a goal for you or could be something you could do. And obviously women have seen other women playing basketball over the years, but I think that the fact that it's drawing this much attention right now is something new. And I think that's why you hear those genuine words that you played from Caitlin Clark earlier about how important it is for her that people see the joy that they play with and that they're bringing them joy, because she doesn't think anyone's going to remember how many points she scored years from now.
Yeah, let me play that.
I think she is very much realizing the impact that this is having, and it's a turning point where they're drawing more viewers than the men. They're drawing, I think their tickets are going for $1,000 more than the men's
tickets
for the Final
Four right
now.
It's certainly a more interesting conversation. Yeah, I mean, like, it feels a lot more relevant than whatever is going on in the men's side of this tournament. Yeah, let me play you that Caitlin Clark. Here's the sound from her yesterday.
People didn't really ever think we would get to the Final Four, and now to be here back-to-back times is amazing. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, people aren't going to remember how many points I scored. People aren't going to remember, you know, people may remember that we were in the Final Four twice, but people aren't going to remember, like, my buzzer-beating shots versus whoever. Like, that's not going to matter to people in the end. I hope they remember, you know, how we made them feel, how we brought joy to their lives, how we gave their families something to scream about on the TV on the weekends. You know, I hope those are the biggest things that people remember. I hope, you know, all the young boys and girls remember the joy that we played with and how we took 10 seconds of our time to sign their autograph and that inspired them to, you know, be whatever they want to be. I think that goes for, like, I think I'm speaking for our entire team, and, you know, that's what we're kind of the most proud of, the way we've carried ourselves through this entire process.
It's a really great sentiment. Honestly, the more I hear that sound, the more I love it. It's such a great first of all, it's a great way for her as a basketball player to just kind of take some of the pressure off. Hey, it's not about what how many I score. The people out there who I'm playing for and who would be adding to the pressure I'm feeling right now, they're not going to remember if I score 38 or 40. What they are going to remember is the feeling that we gave them and just sort of going out and doing our thing. It's just an incredible way of pushing some of the pressure off of her. And it's really true. And it speaks to the magnitude of this moment. And yeah, Maura, you're right about the idea of representation. And again, my kids generally don't care. They're like, yeah, that's just the stupid thing dad does where he watches sports all day. But they're like, oh, hold on a minute. Yeah, I want to watch this. I want to get caught up in it. And I don't know if this leads to either of them. Cecily's been getting into basketball and hockey, and she likes watching that stuff. Avery's been getting into golf, and she loves when I put on the LPGA, and that means something more to her than when I'm watching the PGA. And so, yeah, I found myself thinking that Caitlin Clark, probably this doesn't become a thing if it's not for Sue Bird, if it's not for Diana Taurisi or whoever else it was leading up that inspired her, that got her to this point. And now where does it go from here? I think that's the incredible thing to wonder about.
And so, and that's right. Like so representation mattered in the fact that Caitlin Clark had someone to look up to before her, but it's cool to see how much it can grow to where like your daughters can now say like, they can be just as popular as the men's side.
So let me throw one other thing that she said out there that I think is incredibly important. And this is maybe, again, this is something that it's easy to hear. It's maybe harder to internalize. For me, having daughters, this has become very important to me. But I noticed that the end of that cut, she says the girls and boys. And I think that's important. She doesn't say kids. Okay, fine. She doesn't just say the girls out there. It's the girls and the boys. And it's one thing for someone like me, girl dad, to, you know, make sure that my girls are watching this and that we build our time around it. You really want to create some positive change in the world. Make sure your boys are doing the same thing. I don't have any, absolutely, so I can't do it myself. I've told you guys this story before, is when I sometimes you have to like have daughters to notice this stuff, okay? And when we were reading the girls' books when they were little, like, you know, infants, toddlers, that age, I realized that every single character in a children's book that was not specifically needing to be male or female was male. The main character in every story, unless it was specific, like if it's just Duck, right? Duck was male. Dog, male. Horse, male. Cow, male. Cows aren't even male. Cow, male. Like it just, that's what the story was every single time. And so at some point I was like, well, there's no reason for this story for every one of them to be about men as the main character, boys. And so I just changed them. Kids couldn't read. They didn't know the difference. So I just changed the words. And I'm like, okay, well, this is good for them. They start to feel like, you know, they can be the main character in the story. The same idea of representation. But then you're like, okay, well, if every single boy that's out there is reading the same thing and not getting a dad who's changing the words to this, they believe that they're the main character in every story. And that's sort of how the socialization starts at a very, very young age. And so kind of bringing that back around to now, hey, it's cool to bring your daughters and have your daughters watch this game tonight. It's amazing. I'm doing it. Please, everybody who's got a daughter, find a way to have them watch this game tonight. It is meaningful. Mm-hmm. It has magnitude. Mm-hmm. Have your sons watch too. If you can build your day around it, it's a Friday night and you can do it. Get your sons to watch this game too. Build their day around it. Honestly, I think it is maybe not as important, but pretty darn close. And I think that will, look, can watching a basketball game change the world? I don't know. Maybe not. I'm not trying to say that it will. I don't want to overstep or overshoot. But I do think that would have a very, very positive effect.
A lot of really good context for it. And this is something that I grew up with. Like all the guys I grew up with, that was hunting was for guys. Like hunting season was all the dudes. And my sister got left behind and she wanted to go so bad. Mm. Now she's a sponsored bow hunter.
Yeah, your sister's like, a badass bow hunter.
She's
right?
A badass. That's what she does. She travels the country going to these events and showing women that you can do this. This is not just this old guy's thing. And she saw it because there were other women that did it before her.
Yeah, amazing.
Like, I'm super proud of
that. That's very cool, man. Very cool story. So, Maura, thank you for your insight on it. Appreciate it. Appreciate you. Justin, thank you for yours as well. And thanks to Caitlin Clark, not just for being awesome, but for saying a lot of the right things and hopefully giving us an opportunity to think a little bit this morning. We'll come back with everything you need to know. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
I gotta tell you, I know that I kind of can give the text line a bad name at times, and that we can occasionally get some things that I find either offensive or just plain ridiculous. Seeing the response to that conversation about tonight's college basketball game is pretty amazing, honestly. Just the fairly universal positive response and people saying that they liked it. I appreciate it. As the dad of three boys, says the 253, it might be more important, or at least just as. Goes on and on and on. Really appreciate it from all of you guys. Yep, tonight is going to be great. You've got an epic, epic battle here. And really, it's not just the second game with Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers and everything that goes into that. The opening act should be awesome also. I mean, look, let's face it. As good as Caitlin Clark is, the best team in college basketball this year is South Carolina, and they're taking on NC State beforehand. Then we'll get the big rivalry game, or at the very least, the game everyone seems to be most excited about. Gino Auriemma, legendary UConn coach, says, yeah, these two girls are going to get after each other.
They know what's going on out there. They know who's who. They know what's what. And Caitlin comes down and makes a huge three. Don't think the page is going to pass the next one up and pass it to somebody. So I think there will be a little bit of that, but it won't be if I score more points than Caitlin, Connecticut's going to win. It won't be that at all. And it won't be I have to match everything that she does. Paige's personality is such that she'd rather score 10 points and us win than get 50 and us lose.
Yeah, and I would say both of them are. What's great about both of these two players is they're both excellent scorers. They're both fantastic passers. That's honestly the thing about Caitlin's game that I think gets, you know, maybe passed over or overlooked more, is just the number of assists she racks up. Said it yesterday with Graz that I see her as sort of a combination between Reggie Miller and Larry Bird, and those are sort of the two players she reminds me of. I'm sure there's some Steph Curry thrown in there. I just haven't watched nearly as much of him. And yeah, can't wait for tonight. Going to be a great, great opportunity to watch some hoops. We know 12.3 million people were the average on Monday. What does tonight look like? 14? 15? Can't wait to see that number as well.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Baseball. Mariners back to it after a much-needed day off yesterday. Just kind of regather yourself and now get back to it. Scott Servais on with Wyman and Bob yesterday likes that they're going on the road.
I definitely think so. And he even felt it last night on the airplane. Guys, I don't think people realize how much turnover we've had in our roster. And it's something I talked about early in spring and haven't mentioned much lately. You know, our opening day roster, 26 players, last year in 2023, only 8 of those guys are back. And there are core players and you know, some younger guys. You know, we kept all our pitching staff together, but we've had quite a bit of turnover. And, you know, I expected us to maybe come out of the chute a little bit quicker on that first homestand. It didn't happen. I mentioned in the postgame the other day, it is such a long journey.
Is it really 8? Maybe it was 8 position player. I don't know. I thought that when I did the math, it was like 13. It was roughly half the team that had turned over. Regardless, it's more than you tend to think. And there probably is something to the level of bonding that is necessary. On the other hand, this road is not about to get much easier. Milwaukee's a good team. Toronto's a good team. And it starts tonight. Logan Gilbert will be on the hill, which is great news. The bad news, Freddie Peralta's been really good the last couple of years, and especially in his first start this year. He allowed just one run and one hit in 6 innings against the Mets. I know the Mets have had their problems, but that's still a pretty nice night at the office. So 5 p.m. first pitch. You'll hear the game right here on Seattle Sports.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
We are now under 3 weeks from the draft. Brady Henderson will join me for Blue 88 coming up here in 25 minutes. John Schneider, though, on yesterday with Wyman and Bob as well. Man, what a show there. Those guys are on fire. Like, every day they've got fantastic guests. And yesterday it was both the skipper and the Seahawks GM. We know that the Stephon Diggs trade went down earlier this week. How will that affect them in the first round of the draft?
You know, we've talked about it in the past. So the pro guys, you know, are in charge. They're basically the pro scouts or the experts with their specific teams. So, you know, DJ, Armani, Willie, those guys, like, okay, so what is, you know, Buffalo's world look like now? You know, what kind of ammunition do they have? Would they want to be getting up into the area we are, if we want to be moving back? Yeah, absolutely. It's a constant conversation.
As it should be. I don't know whether it's going to change much, but he did go up and John did say this as well. And this one kind of jumped out to me. Not that I think it's going to happen, but it's at least a possibility.
When you go up, you're adding cash, right? So, you know, we are at 16. The signing bonus slated there is like 8.5 compared to the big one last year at 5, right? The difference is huge. So, yeah, you have to be careful. You know, make sure you're budgeted appropriately so that, you know, if we do move up, it looks a certain way, or you're moving back and acquiring more, you know, more players. But then that signing bonus number is a little bit slotted lower, you know, but you're still adding another whole signing bonus. So, yeah, you have to be flexible and pliable and just be, you know, strict with, you know, what that's going to look like.
I mean, as we know, you can kind of move the cap around in lots of ways, at least short term, to fit your needs. But interesting to hear him at the very least bringing up or being open to the thought process that they would move up. I still think it's unlikely this year, given their lack of draft capital. But at least something to watch, given some of the big name players that might be at positions of need for the Seahawks this year. All right, there you go. That is everything you need to know. 7:15 every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. All right. You had a good point. Quickly, give me your point, because then I got to tease who we've got coming up next.
Oh, well, just having this conversation about how women's college basketball growing in popularity so much, I thought it was interesting that it kind of also comes back to the changing landscape of college sports and NIL, in that I heard Chris Canty make this point on the morning show before us on Sportsmanlike, that the women are not kind of doing the same thing that the men are, where it's a lot of one and done or 2 years max and done before they go to the NBA. Most of them are staying for at least 3 or 4 years. And so they're becoming household names in that way, too. We're seeing more of them. We've seen Caitlin Clark grow and develop. And so I think that it's giving us a unique opportunity to get to know them and want to cheer for them that entire time.
Glad you bring that up. Perfect timing. First of all, yes, totally agree. It's another huge part of the reason that tonight is so impactful. Secondly, it's a perfect lead in to where we're going next. I told you guys earlier this week that I was super into this story I talked about with Brock and Blue 88 yesterday about the Super League in college football that was being reported by The Athletic this week. I think it's a fascinating idea. 70 teams. In fact, I'll let Andrew Marchand explain the whole thing. He broke the story yesterday along with Stuart Mandel. But essentially, 70 teams from the Power 5 conferences, plus another 10 that would be either relegated or promoted based on success, the whole thing is collectively bargained so that the players do receive compensation, but it's done the right way, where it comes with essentially contracts so that they're not constantly moving from one place to another. If you were to do it, you know what else? You could probably stop, and I'm going to make sure to ask him about this, is coaches bailing left and right. That doesn't happen in the NFL or Major League Baseball. You have a league with one commissioner at the top who says, no, if the kids are going to commit, you're going to commit as well. Could you get fired? Yes. But are you just going to bail for the next open job? No. We're going to put a stop to some of that. So I think this has a huge number of challenges to make it work. He can explain a lot of those because Marchand is really involved in the media landscape, and that plays a big part in this. But honestly, of all of the ideas that have come up regarding college sports and especially college football over the years, this is the first one I think actually has some legs and really could mean something. And oh, by the way, might salvage everything that's been built at Wazoo and Oregon State. So stick around. We're going to talk to Andrew Marchand next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Well, after about a decade and a half of debating with Brock about college sports and paying the players and how it should all look, we got obviously some huge movement a few years ago. Is it better? In some ways, yes. In other ways, no. And clearly, this is not going to be the final answer for what college sports will look like. So I was really excited when I read this the other day in The Athletic. Great job reporting by Andrew Marchand and also Stuart Mandel on this proposed Super League. And so I've known Andrew for a long time. It's been a while, like, you know, 15 years. But I thought I would bring him on today and see if we could chat about it a little bit. Andrew, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I love this story. I thought it was, first of all, incredibly well reported. Nice job. But also, it's the first thing I've heard in ages that feels like it will actually have some legs to try to solve some of the problems in college football. Tell me what you guys found and why this could work.
So a couple of things. I think the biggest thing that the takeaway after doing all the reporting that I found was these coming lawsuits and the impact they could have on college sports. Now, we all know about NIL. We know about the transfer portal. And we know that there's been talk about collegiate athletes, amateur athletes being paid in the near future and already being paid in some degree. But these new cases, it could cost these schools billions, that's with a B as in boy, in fees and in back pay for NIL. And then there's going to be more lawsuits if they don't kind of come up with a solution because it's just unwielding in terms of all the different laws and et cetera. So that makes these, you know, an opportunity potentially, depending on how everything plays out. And so the group that that we spoke to and the whole story is about is called College Sports Tomorrow. It's led by Len Perna, who runs Turnkey, which places basically all the athletic directors, including in your neck of the woods, George Kliakoff of the Pac-10 or the Pac-12, but also others like Greg Sankey, Tony Petitti, et cetera, who are with the SEC and the Big Ten. And so he's one of the leaders. The name that really caught my attention when I first heard about this around the Super Bowl was Brian Rolapp, who's the number two at the NFL. So if Roger Goodell were to retire, Brian Rolapp would be one of the first names, if not the first name, that people would say he's the next commissioner of the NFL. I'm not saying he would definitely get it, but he's the mastermind behind their $110 billion deals. And then lastly, we talked to a couple of presidents, the West Virginia president, the Syracuse president, who's also involved in this. And, you know, they said an existential crisis, and they have this plan to have one super league as the format for college football going forward.
I love the idea, and, you know, essentially taking 70 schools, right, the old Power Five plus a couple others, and putting them into seven divisions or conferences, and then adding 10 more with the soccer-style relegation system. Playoffs would look normal. I love all of that just in terms of being a sports fan, but I think what I'm most intrigued by is the collective bargaining element of it. So how do they propose that could work?
Well, the players would have to agree to have a union because, you know, to figure out the transfer portal, how players would get paid, and most likely a salary cap of some sort because, you know, the way where it's going, it's the Wild West where it's, you know, boosters are kind of picking up the fee. It's not tax deductible. That's not going to last. They're not going to just keep spending money hand over fist year after year to try to win. That's just not sustainable. And so the players would have to want to do that. And it probably, you know, I'm not going to say be forced upon them because they're going to be able to, they don't have to, they cannot agree to it. But if that's a system where you get paid this much, if you go to the top SEC school, you know, which may not exist, it does make sense. Like if you read our story, which you did, but if your listeners do, I think if you were to start college football today, you'd say, you know what, this format is way better than what is on the horizon and, you know, what we see. Now, let me just really, very important here. The SEC and the Big Ten, ESPN and Fox, they have the power here. There's long-term contracts for a lot of money. And you know, they're not going to just kind of say, oh, let's be altruistic and just, you know, make things great for everybody, which is not, they're totally their right because, you know, they're going to look out for themselves and that's their job. You know, that's, you know, in your neck of the woods, the Pac-12 did not do a good job of that over the last, you know, 5-10 years and now it doesn't exist. But this is a chance for Washington State and other schools that are kind of feeling left out or are left out, you know, right now, where they can have it, you know, where it could make sense. And I also think the why, besides the lawsuits, I also think the way it does work, if you're Greg Sankey at the SEC or Tony Petitti at the Big Ten, and they have already formed an alliance, do you want to just have an AFC, NFC with those two conferences? Maybe, but you're going to ruin college football everywhere around the rest of the country. And do you want to be known as that person or those people who did that? I don't think so. So I do think there's a large, you do want to kind of be, I think, inclusive. Now, That would be my advice. Yeah, be greedy a little bit, but I'd also try to have everyone involved. I think it's better for your schools long term and better for everybody.
Well, it'd certainly be a lot better here for Washington State and Oregon State, who essentially were left out with the Pac-12 demise. This would almost throw them a lifeline, right, to bring them back into the fold as former Power Five conference schools.
Yes. And like, yes, 100%. I mean, if you look at this system, this would be the top 70 schools would be permanent members of the Super League. So that's the former Power Five, including your schools, and the Notre Dame and probably SMU. And then those, they would be made up of 7-10 team divisions. And then you'd have an eighth division that would be composed of the second division teams, the top teams from the second division, and there would be promotion and relegation for that last 10-member spot. So even if, let's say, and I think they would be in the 70, but let's say they weren't, Washington State and Oregon State, they'd be able to play their way into the top division. And the way that they've played over the last year, you would think they would be able to do that.
Right.
But obviously they'd rather be permanent members, so they don't have to deal with going up and down. But yeah, it would make they would want this plan. The issue, you know, and here's the thing. So how does it happen? They do have some private equity people involved in it, and we looked into the private equity because that's the thing. The whispers, especially with the number two at the NFL involved. If they have this huge ruling against them, or they come to a settlement where they owe a lot of money, they're going to need a plan to go forward. And that's where private equity could come in. And, you know, would they own part of college football? I guess that's very possible. I mean, we had people, a top administrator involved in college football, saying that's what this group is trying to do, own college football. I don't know. We had them on the record. There's no proof of that as of yet. The way the ownership would work, it would be like the MLS style, where the universities would own a percentage of the league, and the teams that perform the best in terms of revenue on TV, et cetera, would get more of the money, and also how they did on the field would result in better financial outlook.
God, I love this. I just think this is so fascinating. I'm so glad you guys are on this story, and thanks for joining me. A couple of quick ones. If Brock were here, you know, first of all, he said the same thing, kind of went right to the private equity thing, even wondering if, you know, you would end up with the Saudi fund wanting to get involved with something like that. I think that's a fair question to ask at some point. What about the non-revenue sports? So, you know, one of the things that always gets left out of this conversation is what happens to the non-revenue sports if the football revenue is going to football? Would there be, or could there be, some sort of carve out for that?
Yes. I mean, there definitely could be a carve out. But I think the way they look at it is they got to get football correct. And if you can fuel football and have, you know, the proper finances going into football, then, then you can figure out the rest of the sport. And, you know, basketball obviously is one where there might be some, ways to structure it differently as well. The idea of these presidents and this group is that you need to bring more money into the system. If you're negotiating the TV deals with one entity, that'd be better. It's complicated because you have a lot of legacy involved, and that makes it very difficult, which you saw. That's why, Washington State and Oregon State were left out, because, it wasn't just like someone like, what's the most logical way to do this where it's fair to everybody? It was musical chairs. And, the Pac-12 really didn't play their cards right, because, they should have taken an ESPN deal, ESPN Fox deal, before the Big 12 went in front of them. That was on the table for them. They should have done that, and they didn't, and then they got left out. So is that fair? Not really, but that's how it happened.
What did I see Nick Khan saying the other day, that he'd never even heard of the guy who was negotiating for the Pac-12? Like, oh, that's not a good sign. All right, last thing here, and then I'll let you go on your way, and just encourage people again to go read this story at The Athletic. I loved it. Just totally blew me away. I think it's a fantastic idea and really well reported. The one other question I think I would have is, okay, one of the great parts of this is that it would eliminate the constant transferring. I like the fact that they've allowed kids to transfer now more easily than it used to be, but the constant transferring kind of makes it hard to just build a team and know what you're going to have from year to year. But the flip side of that is, well, one of the awful parts of college football is the coaches just going from school to school themselves. Would this potentially, and I know nothing's in stone, hasn't even gone through yet, could this potentially eliminate some of the coach hopping as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're looking at everything. That's not something we discussed or, you know, I asked about. So I don't know for certain. You know, that, like, that part of it, there's some of it that, you know, this isn't professional sports. And so, you know, if you have a union, you can negotiate all these things. I just don't know how you tell coaches and players, for that matter. Like, I don't know if these are student athletes and, you know, if they don't like their situation, it's hard to say, like, well, no, you're stuck there because you're an athlete. Like, and a regular student's allowed to leave. So, but I think they're going to think about that and how to best do that. You know, there's some, I'm not going to get into them because they've, you know, I don't want to cause, like, if someone picks it up, it would cause a stir.
Right.
But there are some other ideas. I'm not teasing this, but there are some other ideas I heard that are very interesting in terms of, like, dealing with that kind of stuff. But I need to fully report those out, and I don't want to just throw them out there and then, you know, it ends up on the internet and, you know what I mean? It's like I'm reporting this, and so it's how the world works.
Totally understand. Last thing, and a one word answer would suffice. If you had to bet, do you think that this proposal or something like it, not necessarily in its final form, but something like it, eventually comes to pass? Or do you think this is pie in the sky and it's just not going to work?
I'm not going to answer one word because I can't with one word. I will say, because my answer is really this, though. You know, like, it was a good question, but, like, I'm going to just go off the board a little bit. Yeah. I think the ideas in the story are going to see the light of day. Will this group be the ones to do it? I think not all the ideas, but I think a lot of them, and look, they're not all like novel ideas, like no one has ever thought of them. I think that there's a very good chance that that these ideas, at least some of them, make it. Now, it's going to, but the power center is the Big 12, the Pac-12, ESPN, Fox, to a degree, Notre Dame and NBC, but more the four I mentioned. Those are the ones who have the power to decide what the future looks like, and they will.
Love it. Hey, thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming on. It's a great story. You and Stuart did an awesome job with it, and I'll just encourage people again, go to The Athletic and read this, because I think it is just a really different new way in some ways of looking at where college football can go, and maybe for the first time some hope for some of the problems to be solved. Andrew, appreciate it as always. Good to catch up with you. Hope we get to do it again.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, there you go. I love it. I really, there's a bunch of stuff in there that I could spend like the next hour talking about. When we come back to it a little bit later in the show, I am going to talk about the lawsuits and their importance. I am going to talk about the importance of having the NFL involved. I'm going to talk about the boosters and some of the frustration there. I think those 3 points will end up carrying quite a bit of the water when this all eventually comes to pass. So we'll come back to that. Right now, Lil Blue 88.
This is Brock and Sox Blue 88. We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down 3 football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Sox.
All right, Brady Henderson, our friend and confidant, filling in today for Brock and Blue 88. Good morning, Brady.
Morning, Michael. How's it going?
Well, I'm excited you're up. It means that I won't have to wake you up to get you to the golf course later, so that's good news.
That's never happened. That never will happen. Of course I'm up. I'm always up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I hear every minute of the show every day.
Wow. Even at 6.
Even at 6 o'clock.
Impressive.
Oh, yeah.
You got our full Ludacris breakdown at 6 o'clock. All right. You were also on yesterday afternoon doing Wyman and Bob. You had your chance to talk to John Schneider. What did you learn from John Schneider yesterday?
Yeah, well, he talked a little bit about the guards or the interior offensive line situation. I think and there wasn't really a big revelation, but one thing I thought was interesting was he kind of gave some insight about the makeup of a scouting department. And for people who don't know, your scouting department in the NFL is typically divided into your college scouts and your pro scouts, and your college scouting department is going to be a little bit bigger just because there's more colleges to cover than there are NFL teams. And you know, this time of the year, obviously your college scouts are coming to play massively, because these are the guys who have been spending months at these schools. They go on the campuses, they develop sources there, and they're, you know, going to these games and writing reports on these players. So they really factor heavily this time of the year, but so do your pro scouts in a different way. And I think people don't often realize that, you know, when you hear John Schneider talk about Nolan Teasley and Willie Schneider and DJ Horde and Armani Perez, those are guys on the in the pro scouting department headed by Nolan Teasley. And the reason why they factor in big this time of the year is because they basically divide the NFL, you know, into sections, and each guy is, you know, responsible for a handful of teams. And it's that guy's job to know the ins and outs of that team. And the reason why that comes into play this time of the year is because obviously free agency, but then going into the draft, you know, it's that guy's job to really give John Schneider a good feel for, hey, what does this team need? What is their history in the draft say that they're going to do at this spot? What players might be available to the Seahawks? Because this team might take that guy, or they might pass on that guy, or they may want to make a trade. So you think about the college scouts a lot this time of the year, but the pro scouting department also comes into play quite a bit.
All right, question number two. Well, you mentioned guards, and that was one of the things that came up. Obviously, anybody looking at this roster would notice that they don't really have much at the guard position. Who are they looking at? Who could potentially be here to play guard?
Yeah, as I understand it, there's really three veteran guys that they've got their eye on right now. One is Lakin Tomlinson, another is Cody Whitehair, and then the third guy is Greg Van Roten. So all, you know, veteran guys in their early 31, 32, 34 years old. I think Van Roten's 34. So they would all be veteran guys who would come in and, you know, probably wouldn't be Pro Bowl caliber players, although Tomlinson and Whitehair both have Pro Bowls on their resume. But you know, these are guys kind of up there in age who would really be solid starters for them. And I think also importantly would add, you know, some veteran presence to what is still a pretty young offensive line. So Tomlinson, the thing to know about him is the former first round pick in 2015, and he is some kind of Iron Man. So he has only missed one game in nine seasons and actually only 9 combined snaps over the last 5 seasons, if you can imagine that. He would be pretty much strictly a left guard. I think about 99% of his playing time over his career has been at left guard. So he would be that and that only, whereas Whitehair has been a little more versatile. In fact, he made a Pro Bowl in 2018 with Chicago as a center, and then he has primarily played left guard since then, but I think he's also played a little bit on the right side. He was actually 6th last year in pass block win rate. So even though a guy who was released by Chicago, you still could be getting a guy with some pretty solid pass blocking upside. And the cool thing to know about both of those two guys, and I think why a big reason why both of them are very much on the Seahawks radar, is, you know, both of them were released. Whitehair by Chicago, Tomlinson by the Jets. And so if the Seahawks signed them, neither of them would count against their formula for compensatory picks. So my sense is, you know, it's Whitehair and Tomlinson are the main options. And then, Van Roten may be more of like a fallback third option who would probably something close to the minimum salary. I don't think any of those guys are going to be making a whole lot of money from Seattle, but I do think you're going to see them sign one of those guys here within the next few days.
All right, question number three. We hear a lot kind of this time of year leading up to the draft about these top 30 visits. What exactly is the point of these?
Yeah, well, it's a 30 visit. Don't call it a top 30 visit or Jim Nagy will yell at you. But no, I agree with him. It is, yeah, I think 30 visit is the technical term. And the reason you hear, the reason it's called 30 is because teams are allowed to bring in 30 players, 30 draft prospects each year to their facility. And it's not a workout. You can't work a guy out there. You have to go to the player to work him out. So this is what you can do with a 30 visit is you bring a guy in, you can, you know, MRI, X-ray, all the medical stuff. And then, you know, you can get to know him and ask him questions and have him meet with position coaches and meet with just everybody in the building. And these can be a little bit misleading. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One is because, you know, one of the main reasons for bringing a guy in for a 30 visit is because you got some questions to answer with him, whether it's medical or whether it's, you know, personality wise, you want to kind of see how he might fit. You got some questions about his background that you want to ask him. And so a lot of times when you see, you know, when a guy projected to go in the early rounds who has a ton of visits lined up, you know, that means a lot of teams are interested in him, but it also means a lot of teams have some questions about him that they need to get answered. So if there's actually an early round projected guy who doesn't have many 30 visits lined up, that could actually mean a good thing, because it could indicate that he's, you know, quote unquote, a clean prospect. Now, the other thing to keep in mind with these visits is sometimes you'll see teams, and the Seahawks do this, they'll bring in guys who are either projected to go in the late rounds or to not get drafted at all. And the thought there is you're almost treating that as kind of like a recruiting trip where, hey, if this guy goes undrafted, well, all of a sudden, you know, he's got to make a decision on what team to sign with. Well, if you've brought him into your facility and you've shown him this great, you know, lakefront property, and you've had him, you know, go to the cafeteria, you've had him meet all the trainers and all the coaches and everything, well, that guy might remember your team and he might be more inclined to sign with you. And so we've seen the Seahawks bring in guys for visits that they end up signing as undrafted guys. I think John Rattigan was one guy recently that comes to mind. So that's another reason why it can be misleading, because you think that if they bring a guy in for a 30 visit, they have an eye on drafting him. It might actually mean they have an eye on signing him as an undrafted guy.
Brady, great stuff. Tremendous knowledge. Awesome job yesterday with Wyman and Bob. And yeah, we'll talk soon and I'll see you later today.
All right, let's go low, my friend.
All right, we're going low. Yep, that's right. Just like Jordan is right now. I think he birdied like 5 of his first 7 holes today. So we'll see where that goes. There's Brady Henderson joining us for Blue 88. Justin.
Yes.
Did you see the Phillies just released their City Connect jerseys?
I did, and they're horrific.
Awful. Oh. You like them?
Yeah,
you like them?
Yeah, what's wrong?
Woof.
What is that font?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing.
They're City Connect. That's the whole point. They're supposed to be weird. They're supposed to be off the wall.
Yes, but
I'm looking at people's comments, and they're like, why are you changing your uniform colors? Like, that's the point. They're supposed to change their uniform colors.
Having gone through the Seattle, I'm wearing my City Connect right now.
I know.
Having gone through the City Connect experience with the dugout dialogue with Kevin Martinez and hearing how much went into every teeny tiny little design element, I'm really excited to see the breakdown. My first initial reaction when I saw it was like,
do you know why they have the Liberty Bell on the hat? Is that one that you were able to?
I didn't see the hat yet. I just saw the jersey.
Oh, there's like a black hat with a Liberty Bell on it, which is kind of cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
No, I just saw the jersey over her shoulder.
They're going black pants. Black pants. I know you're going to hate that.
They're like ombre.
Yeah.
They go blue into black.
I kind of like it. I think it's kind of weird and different, and I kind of like that about the City Connect. All right, quick break. We're going to come back with some buy and sell. Mora has worked out for us. That is next. And then at 8:30, G will come in and lie to our faces. So stick around for that. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com.